For Jennifer Hershey and Susan Corcoran, if you're lucky, you wind up with colleagues you love. If you're luckier, they feel like sisters. XOX. The question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. 5 p.m. The center squatted on the corner of Juniper and Montfort behind a wrought iron gate, like an old bulldog used to guarding its territory. At one point, there had been many like it in Mississippi, nondescript, unassuming buildings where services were provided and needs were met. Then came the restrictions that were designed to make these places go away. The halls had to be wide enough to accommodate two passing gurneys. Any clinic where that wasn't the case had to shut down or spend thousands on reconstruction. The doctors had to have admitting privileges at local hospitals, even though most were from out of state and couldn't secure them, or the clinics where they practiced risked closing too. One by one, the clinics shuttered their windows and boarded up their doors. Now, the center was a unicorn. A small rectangle of a structure painted a fluorescent, flagrant orange, like a flag to those who had traveled hundreds of miles to find it. It was the color of safety, the color of warning. It said, "I'm here if you need me." It said, "Do what you want to me, I'm not going." The center had suffered scars from the cuts of politicians and the barbs of protesters. It had licked its wounds and healed. At one point, it had been called the Center for Women and Reproductive Health. But there were those who believed if you do not name a thing, it ceases to exist. And so its title was amputated, like a war injury. But still, it survived. First, it became the Center for Women. And then, just the Center. The label fit. The center was the calm in the middle of a storm of ideology. It was the sun of a universe of women who had run out of time and had run out of choices, who needed a beacon to look up to. And like other things that shined so hot, it had a magnetic pull. Those in need found it the lodestone for their navigation. Those who despised it could not look away. Today, Wren McElroy thought, was not a good day to die. She knew that other 15-year-old girls romanticized the idea of dying for love, but Wren had read Romeo and Juliet last year in eighth grade English and didn't see the magic in waking up in a crypt beside your boyfriend and then plunging his dagger into your own ribs. And Twilight? Forget it. She had listened to teachers paint the stories of heroes whose tragic deaths somehow enlarged their lives rather than shrinking them. When Wren was six, her grandmother had died in her sleep. Strangers had said over and over that dying in your sleep was a blessing, but as she stared at her Nana, waxen white in the open coffin, she didn't understand why it was a gift. What if her grandmother had gone to bed the night before thinking, "In the morning, I'll water that orchid. In the morning, I'll read the rest of that novel. I'll call my son." So much left unfinished. No, there was just no way dying could be spun into a good thing. Her grandmother was the only dead person Wren had ever seen until 2 hours ago. Now she could tell you what dying looked like, as opposed to just dead. One minute, Olive had been there, staring so fierce at Wren, as if she could hold on to the world if her eyes stayed open, and then, in a beat, those eyes stopped being windows and became mirrors, and Wren saw only a reflection of her own panic. She didn't want to look at Olive anymore, but she did. The dead woman was lying down like she was taking a nap, a couch cushion under her head. Olive's shirt was soaked.